Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome again to another live edition of Wall Street Unspun, the Euro Pacific Capital midweek market update. This is Wednesday, May 25th, 2005. Welcome aboard. Anyway, first of all, I want to apologize for some of the technical problems that we had on the website. We got a lot of emails from people who were having trouble, or the shows weren't up there. There were some technical problems. They've been fixed. Hopefully, they won't reoccur. But last week's program is up in the archives. It's there at www.europac.net, and hopefully, this show will be archived as soon as it's completed. But anyway, I apologize again, and. You know, last week's show, we got an incredible number of phone calls. Six or seven phone calls came in the last 5 or 10 minutes. And what we want to do is try to have the phone calls starting earlier in the program so we have more time to answer the questions and get more of a discussion. So I would invite everybody to call. Don't wait till the last segment. Just call on up. The telephone number to call toll-free is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. And the lines are open now, so just call up with any questions, about the economics, about the market, about the dollar, about interest rates, the economy, politics. Just give me a call. And, remember, the name of the program is Wall Street Unspun, and I try to unspin the propaganda that has taken place during the prior week. I don't think we've had that much significant news since our last program. I know the stock market has been on the strong side over the past week, and I think that's a temporary situation. That I believe that we are firmly entrenched in a long-term bear market, and I think for the last year and a half, we were in a bull market correction of that long-term bear market, which basically, the market made a low in, I think it was April. The actual low for the move was back in 2002, and we've been rising ever since then. But I think that when we market peaked out, a few months back, I think we've completed this retracement, this correction in a bear market. I think the market has seen its highs, and we're headed lower. So I think this last rally that we've seen over the past couple of weeks is a great selling opportunity. Now, also, we've seen a little bit of a bounce in the gold stocks. I think it's a little too early to call the end of this correction in a bull market in the precious metal stocks. I think we need to see the XAU moving a little higher. Right now, it's around 84. It got down to a low of about 78. I think I'd like to see it trading above the 90 level to think that we are more likely out of the woods and maybe have another run at the highs around 102 to 104. And if we can take that out, then be moving a lot higher. But, for now, I still think that there's some danger of the gold stocks headed lower. And as I've said in the past, I think it's very ironic that these gold stocks look to be the ironic victims of inflation, because inflation has so driven up the cost of mining that it is very uneconomical. Being a gold miner is not a very profitable business today. And it's ironic because the reason the price of gold has languished the way it has is because everybody's convinced there's no inflation. Yet inflation is dramatically increasing the cost of mining. And also, I happen to be by the gold show, the New York Gold Show, last couple of days. I did not speak there and I didn't exhibit there, but we probably will in the future. One of these days we're going to start attending that conference. We're going to be in the money show in August in Washington, D.C., So those of you who didn't catch us in Las Vegas, if you can, come by the Washington show. I also are most likely going to speak and exhibit at the New Orleans conference in New Orleans in late October, around Halloween. So that's another chance to see us. I haven't been at that conference in some time, and hopefully I'll start making that a regular event, being part of the New Orleans conference. There's always a lot of good people down there. It's a good conference to participate in, and hopefully many of you can join me down there in New Orleans. But in any event, the Gold Show, the New York Gold Show, seemed to be pretty well attended. I mean, I spent about a half a day there yesterday and had a chance to see some old friends. And, you know, I mean, I think the show went well. It wasn't overly crowded, which I think is a good sign. You know, you don't want to see too much optimism out there, especially if you're looking for a bottom in these stocks. Anyway, I know we've got a caller on the line. Our first caller is Bob calling from Buffalo. Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, how you doing, Peter?
Good.
Good. Yeah, I'm calling from a little town outside of Buffalo, Elma. Anyway, I wanted to ask you about, I saw the pro forma, the CPI, PPI, and all that other information came out.
Mm-hmm.
What was your take on the CPI? Because it looks like in the Fed minutes, they were somewhat hawkish on inflation. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean they're not as hawkish as they need be. I mean, I think
right.
The Fed is blowing a smokescreen here. What the Fed wants to do is maintain the illusion that they're vigilant, while at the same time stating that there is no inflation. But they want to, at the same time, they want to act as if they're going to snuff it out the minute they see it. But you know, they're ignoring it. I mean, that's the reality. But the media, I talked about this on last week's program, because last week when we got the release of the CPI, all day long on CNBC. They were talking about the benign inflation data that came out, the benign inflation data, even though the CPI came out higher than what they had anticipated. But it was the core rate, the meaningless core rate. And I've said that the core rate is meaningless. That came out flat. But because that part was flat, everybody was excited that there was no inflation. But that's the core is only one part of the CPI. The actual CPI, which includes the core, I mean, the core is part of the whole CPI. The whole CPI, including the core, was up more than expected. And if you look at the CPI for the first 4 months of 2005 and annualize it, inflation is running at an annualized rate of 4.8% in 2005. That's the highest annualized rate of inflation in 16 years. And it's higher than it was in 1971, the year in which inflation was so bad that Richard Nixon imposed wage and price controls. We have higher inflation today than we had wage and price controls. Yet the media, the government, and the Fed are telling us that there's no inflation. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. What I mean, go back over. Could you go back over the gold situation again? Do you, in a rising inflationary environment, what normally happens to gold?
Well, I mean, normally, you know, people would own gold as an alternative to paper currency, as a hedge against inflation. If, you know, gold is something that can't be debased. I mean, gold can only be extracted from the ground as fast as it can be mined, and it's very expensive and hard to mine gold, and so the supply of gold doesn't grow very rapidly. The supply of money, on the other hand, can grow extremely rapidly. And so during times of inflation, people would be more likely to want to hold gold than currencies which are being debased. But right now, very few people understand the extent to which paper money is being debased and the extent to which inflation is really undermining their purchasing power. So if the perception among the people who would be buyers of gold is that there's no reason to buy it because there's no inflation, then that's why the price is where it is.
I see.
I think at some point
there was
more people are going to pull out from over their eyes.
So people would really start buying up gold if they thought there was real inflation, even though Wall Street pretends like there is none.
Sure, of course. And the government pretends. See, they try to keep the sense that if there's any sign of inflation, the Fed will quickly, you know, snuff it out. And so people are saying, well, if there ever is any inflation, we don't have to worry because the Fed's going to be right on it. But that's all bluff. The Fed can't be on it because the only tool they have is to really crank up interest rates. But they can't do that because the whole economy would collapse because the economy needs low interest rates to support the housing bubble and to support, you know, to keep the government borrowing. And the whole economy is going to collapse if consumers lose access to credit and if the real estate bubble, you know, collapses, and all, you know, all of a sudden, you know, when real estate prices collapse, everybody's assets go down, but all their liabilities, all their mortgages are still there. And those mortgages become more expensive to service because of higher interest rates. Yet your assets have lost value. So, I mean, the whole economy would implode. So he's all bark and no bite. And the more, once people realize the box the Fed is in, that the Fed is basically going to let inflation run out of control, and all they're going to do is try to talk it down, then there'll be a run out of the dollar, and you won't be, I mean, gold will go through the roof. But until then, you know, the smart money is accumulating, and accumulating, you know, non-dollar assets and accumulating gold and other precious metals. And I think right now for people who are more aggressive than, you know, gold shares. I mean, gold mining shares, I think, have had a very significant correction. Many gold mining stocks are 2- and 3-year lows. Most stocks are trading at prices well below where they were when gold was $100 an ounce lower than it is today.
So, okay, so back to, I understand that, but back to inflation then. So the numbers that you're looking at, we're at an inflationary pace now that we haven't seen in, what, 20, 30, 40 years?
15 or 16 years, but that's based on the government's numbers. But I think if you threw houses into the picture, remember back in the 1970s, housing prices were part of the CPI. And I think if we were still calculating the CPI today, the way they calculated it in the 1970s, we would probably have inflation, of 8, 9, or 10% or more right now. If we were counting it, if we were still calculating it the same way we calculated it back then.
Right.
But we're not. The government is not being honest with the numbers. And why should they be honest? They have a vested interest in creating a false rosy scenario for a number of reasons. And so does Wall Street. I mean, that's what the public has to understand. That where they're getting their financial information and their information on the state of economy, they're getting it from biased sources, whether they're in the government or in the private sector. That's why people need to think for themselves. And that's hopefully what I'm helping people do, is to pull the government wool out from under their eyes. And then once you can see clearly, okay, you know, what are the solutions? Because unfortunately, there are no solutions for the whole country. The country is going to go through a serious economic downturn with a major contraction in its standard of living. There are no solutions for the country, but there are solutions for us individually. We can protect our own wealth, and we can try to preserve a standard of living for ourselves and our family members. That's all we can do. Now, hopefully we can do something or play a part in rebuilding the country in the aftermath of this collapse. And in fact, the more of our wealth we save now, the more of our own wealth we can preserve by getting it out of the dollar, the better position we will be in the future to help rebuild this country.
Well, it seems like the Fed, by delaying, I mean, I believe what you're saying is true, and the information on Wall Street seems so tainted. So if the Fed, the longer he delays because he's trying to save the economy, the more inflationary we're going to become, and he's going to be in a rock and a hard place. Eventually, he's going to have to raise, and it's going to be hyper.
Oh, it's going to be a disaster. He's not saving the economy. He's just postponing the inevitable. He's trying to preserve the jobs of his political friends. That's all they're doing, because Greenspan knows he's creating a bigger problem. That's all he's doing. And delaying the day of reckoning doesn't do anybody any good except the politicians, or except, you know, buying some time, but at the cost of a much, much greater problem. That's why I'm telling people, or telling my clients, that the longer into the future this collapse happens, the more severe it's going to be, and the more important it is that you do something about it. You know, it's like I've used an analogy. You know, when you get into an automobile, you buckle up. You put the seatbelt on right when you get in. You don't wait until you're in the middle of an accident and then try to frantically reach for the seatbelt. You know, you buckle up just in case there's an accident, because if there is an accident, you can't react to it when it happens. You've got to be prepared in advance. The difference here is this accident is going to happen for sure. You know, this car is going to crash. And so you got to get your safety belt on, and the way you do that, or better yet, get out of the car before it crashes, and you do that by getting out of the dollar and building a portfolio of conservative assets that pay interest and dividends. And don't worry if you're doing it too early, because there's only two ways that you're going to do it. It's either too early or too late, and too late is no good. So you got to be too early, because if you're not too early, you're going to be too late. Nobody can do it just perfectly, exactly on time. Maybe one of us, one out of a million, will get to do it exactly perfectly. But most of us are either going to do it too early or too late. And I want to make sure that the people that listen to this radio show are doing it too early. And, you know, again, that's, you know, that's what we're really trying to help people do. That's why I do the radio show. That's why I travel to these conferences, is I want to try to convince as many Americans as I can that this is a major problem, that they can't believe the media, they can't believe Wall Street, and they got to take responsibility for their own financial futures, and they got to protect a lifetime of savings by getting out of U.S. dollar assets, getting out of municipal bonds, government bonds, corporate bonds, anything in the U.S., and owning the most conservative assets around the world in the countries where their currencies are most likely not to collapse like the dollar. Have you set up an account with us yet?
Yes, I already talked to one of your brokers.
All right, how long ago?
Just last week. I'm just going over some things with them. Could you expound a little bit more on some of the things that you're involved in, what you're buying overseas?
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't usually get into the specific names of the stocks that we're dealing with. I mean, we leave that to the brokers and to private conversations for people who want to call up the company. But as I've said, in general, we're looking to conserve wealth. We're investing internationally as a safe haven. We're looking to reduce risk. We're not seeking risk. So we tend to buy stocks that are very conservative, that pay high dividends, where their earnings are very transparent and predictable. So we end up buying a lot of real estate trusts and a lot of utilities and energy-type trusts and, you know, basic companies that, you know, they're not high flyers, they're not momentum stocks. You know, we're not trying to, you know, get burned or, you know, hit the home run here. We just want to get on base or get off base, as the case may be, or, you know, out of Dodge. And it's a very basic strategy. But it's a strategy that so far, over the last, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years, has produced phenomenal returns when benchmarked against a portfolio of U.S. stocks or bonds. And that's without a major disaster. Remember, this portfolio is designed, or my portfolios are designed, to do the best during a major economic catastrophe in the United States with a collapsing dollar, you know, very rapid inflation, recession, you know, unemployment, bear markets. That's when our portfolios do the best. Designed to, anyway. Also managed to do pretty well during periods of time where that hasn't happened.
Right, and I was going to say, if and when they float the yuan, you're going to get another boost.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons. I've talked about that in the last couple of programs. One of the best no-brainer investments that I can think of, where people are going to be kicking themselves in the head for not having taken advantage of it, is the opportunity to accumulate Chinese assets while they're on sale, while the government is artificially suppressing their price, and particularly if you can find the assets that will most benefit from a stronger yuan. And that'll be companies that import products into China and sell domestically, because the cost of their imports will go down and the value of their sales will rise, or, you know, especially if you're selling products, like, as I said, we've talked about the utilities in China quite often. What happens with the utilities is, let's say you're making your electric utility and you're making electric power. How do you make power? Well, you use coal. You use oil or natural gas. Well, the Chinese have to buy these things. They're priced in dollars. So when the renminbi rises, all of a sudden it's cheaper for these electric companies to make electricity, so their profits are higher. But at the same time, their customers, the Chinese households, their wages now are worth more. Products are now cheaper for them. Maybe they can start buying a lot of energy-consuming products that right now they don't have. And so at the same time the cost of providing power is going down, the amount of power they're providing is increasing. So their profits are really going up in terms of the yuan, but of course those profits are worth that much more from our perspective because we're repatriating them back to dollars. So this is one of the no-brainers of a lifetime, you know, one of those opportunities that comes around once in a while where you can clearly buy something that is so remarkably undervalued. And one day the government is going to, you know, you're going to wake up and you're going to find the government has floated the currency and your asset is worth dramatically more than it was with the night before when you went to sleep. You know, in the meantime, there's not a lot of downside risk in these things, in my opinion, and they've got pretty good dividend yields. I mean, certainly better than what you're going to get the stateside.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. I have another question, though. How long do you think this downturn is going to last
Obviously, it depends on when Greenspan, what he does with interest rates.
I don't know how long it's going to last. A lot of that depends on what policies or, you know, the government implements to retard the free market's ability to correct the problem or allow, you know, I mean, we've dug ourselves a tremendous ditch, and we're going to have to dig our way out of this thing. And, you know, obviously, if the government is standing on the shovels, it's going to make it more difficult. But what we're going to need is for the government to get out of the way. We're going to need massive deregulation, massive cuts in government spending, in elimination of programs, reduction of taxes. The government is going to have to be as small a burden as possible on the free market so we can go and, on our own, rebuild a viable economy. But even under the best circumstances, right, it's going to take a long time. We're going to have to rebuild an entire industrial economy, again, that's been lost. And, you know, I mean, it's not going to be maybe as difficult as people had it in Germany or Japan at the end of World War II. I mean, our cities weren't bombed out. We didn't just fight a losing war, but it's going to be a tough battle. But it's going to be very difficult to fight it, you know, if the government is in our way. And so we're going to have to really remove a lot of government. I mean, the Great Depression lasted so long because of the policies that first began by Hoover, but were really accelerated by Roosevelt. And, you know, people credit Roosevelt for getting us out of the Depression. He didn't get us out of the Depression. He prolonged the Depression. I mean, he got elected in 1932, and when World War II came along, we were still in the Depression. I mean, all he did is postpone it. All his policies did is get in the way. Yet he gets credit for taking us out of the Depression. We would have been out of it a lot quicker if he had never stepped foot into the White House. But anyway, I thank you very much for your call, and tell your friends, have them call us up to open an account and tell them about the program.
Thanks a lot, Peter. I appreciate all your time.
Okay, Bob. Anyway, it was a good call. I want to take another break and play a message for how to get a hold of your Pacific Capital. In the meantime, give us a call. It's 888-678-9597. The lines are open. Call with your questions or comments, 888-678-9597. Let's pause for a commercial, and we'll be back at the end of the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Well, we're back. Again, it's Peter Schiff, and let me give you guys the number again. The call, the lines are open. It is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Well, you know, a lot of talk again in the last week about the housing bubble, or the lack of a housing bubble, depending on the perspective. But there seems to be a lot more conversation recently in the media about the housing bubble and whether or not there is one. I mean, as I've said before, it's not that there's a housing bubble. There's the mother of all housing bubbles, or the mother of all bubbles. I mean, this bubble is huge. You know, even Alan Greenspan now is raising some concerns that maybe there could be a bubble. Now, this is the person who adamantly denied that there was a bubble in the stock market. In fact, he said that it's impossible to know if there's a bubble until after it bursts, which is ridiculous. It's very easy to know that there's a bubble. But now, I mean, obviously the bubble in this in real estate has got to be so bad that for a while he was denying it. He was categorically saying there was no bubble. And now he's a little nervous that there might be, which I think that's a little bit too little too late. this is the greatest bubble. And it's very interesting listening to people on television or reading people in the media who are trying to defend the fact that it's not a bubble. And anyway, the number again, for those of you who want to call the office, who want to call and speak to a live broker now, the telephone number is 800-727-7922. That's 800-727-7922. But about what I was saying about the housing bubble, what's so interesting is the nonsense that the people say who are trying to argue that there's no bubble. Now, of course, it's interesting because every time I see an argument from somebody that there's no housing bubble, inevitably that person is somehow related to the housing sector. Either they're an employee of a home builder, they're a realtor, they're an employee of a realtor's organization or some national organization of realtors or home builders or whatever it is. So there's always somebody with a vested interest in perpetuating the real estate bubble to be out there and denying that there's a bubble. But they keep trying to come up with reasons, demographics, or, you know, why it's different. You know, I'm seeing somebody today where, you know, people were talking about how real estate in Japan, you know, there was a bubble in real estate in Japan and in Hong Kong. And, you know, 10, 15 years later, residential prices are still 50 and 60% below where they were at their peaks. And the bubbles here in the United States are far worse than the bubbles we had in Japan and China. And there's far more leverage going on. You know, people weren't buying property in those bubbles with nothing down and interest-only mortgages. And they just weren't doing it. And in those countries, you know, the Asians really are not likely to walk away from debt. I mean, they don't want to lose face. There's a lot more honor involved. I mean, Americans will go bankrupt. I mean, bankruptcy is almost a national pastime. I mean, although I think right now the national pastime is real estate flipping or real estate speculating. But I think there is a stigma associated with not paying your mortgage or defaulting on a debt. So I think a lot of people in Asia, Japan or Hong Kong, who bought, you know, apartments for, you know, $500,000, kept making their mortgage payments even though they were only worth $200,000. I don't think that that's going to happen in our bankruptcy culture, especially if people borrowed with an adjustable rate mortgage and their mortgage has gone from, you know, $2,000 a month to $5,000 a month. I mean, how long are they going to pay, you know, even if they can afford it? I mean, chances are they can't afford it because the only reason they took out an adjustable rate mortgage is because that was all they could afford. And if they could have afforded $5,000 a month, they would have bought a bigger house. I mean, most people are maxed out right now. And when interest rates go up, you know, I mean, it's interesting, too, when they talk about the large number of speculators in today's real estate market, they're always talking about people who are buying homes and specifically identifying their homes as investment property. And it's very high. It's about 25%, which is, you know, it's very, very high. But the reality is many people who are buying homes to live in them are actually speculators, but they don't count them as speculators. And the reason I know this is because, like, in places like Southern California, you've got 85% of the people taking out adjustable-rate mortgages. And what is the number one justification for why somebody is taking out a mortgage that's only fixed for 3 years or 5 years? And the reason is they only intend to stay in the house for 3 years or 5 years or 2 years. And so why bother with a 30-year mortgage if they're only going to live there for 3 years? Well, if they're only going to live there for 3 years, they're speculating. I mean, they're not buying the house with the intention of paying off the mortgage and living there forever. They're buying it to turn around and sell it. Well, just because they're living in it while they're speculating in it doesn't mean that they're not real estate speculators. They are speculators. They're buying houses where they know they can't make the payments in a few years because they assume they're going to sell the property before the higher payments kick in. They're all speculators. This is the biggest speculative frenzy in U.S. history. I think this makes the bubble of the 1990s in technology look like a molehill. This is indeed the mother of all bubbles, and it is going to have the mother of all aftershocks when it bursts, because the entire economy in the United States is teetering atop this bubble and is completely dependent on the asset-generated spending that the bubble has facilitated. Anyway, we've got another caller on the line. We've got Ron from Dayton, Ohio. Go ahead, Ron.
Yes, sir. I own real estate, and you're scaring me half to death, but I had two additional questions. Was just playing with shortwave and came up on you 10-15 minutes ago, and I missed the commercial. What I need to know is I'm looking for a mutual fund situation, perhaps to get into dealing with energy or dealing with something conservative overseas that a person could flip $1,500 or $2,000 into. Have you got any advice, or is that too...
Well, first of all, I would say if you own real estate, don't be scared. Be glad. Sell it. You've got an opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, to sell your real estate to a bunch of idiots who have access to unlimited access to credit. Mm-hmm. You can put your house up for sale, and anybody with a pulse can go get a 100% financing, nothing down, interest-only mortgage, and buy that house from you.
Well, that's a thought.
So get it out of the market, sell it while you can, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe you'll have more than $15,000 or $20,000 to invest. But what I would suggest is rather than looking toward the mutual fund, because I haven't really been able to find many mutual funds that really accomplish what it is I want to accomplish, is you can create your own. We can buy for you energy-related assets and foreign stocks, all of which pay good dividends. You won't have any annual management fees to pay a fund manager. You'll get spendable income in your pocket every month. And in fact, if you sell your house and buy a conservative portfolio of foreign assets, you should generate more than enough dividend income every month to pay your rent.
Hmm.
You might be able to rent a house, you know, for a much better buy, especially on the high end. I mean, on the low end of the market, it's still probably cheaper to buy than rent, which is interesting, especially if you use interest-only zero-down financing. But on the upper-end properties, at the high end of the spectrum, you can rent mansions for next to nothing compared to what it would cost to buy them.
I'd have to think about that. It's a duplex. I'm living in one half, and I want to rent the other, and I thought it might be...
Even better, sell the whole thing. And rent, sell the whole thing and rent one unit back from the new owner. See, sell it as an income-producing property. You're the tenant. Let somebody buy it and live in it and rent to you. There you go. Get out.
Okay.
House, think of it. Just think of it as a house.com and get rid of it before the bubble bursts.
So I thought, okay, but the question is, now you're back up. You were stating about finding stocks and this sort of thing. Is there a phone number one could call during 9 to 5 to connect with a broker or someone to...
Yeah, call my office. It's 800-727-7922.
Mm-hmm.
I've got several guys there now that can help you. And they're good guys, and they're all taking their directions from me. So all the advice you're going to get is coming from me. So you can be assured that it's going to be good. I mean, you're getting good investment guidance, and we're going to help you to preserve your wealth.
Might want to do something over the next 30 to 60 days. Thanks for the time, sir. Have a nice evening.
Bye-bye.
Pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, don't be scared if you own real estate. Be glad. I wish I owned some so I can sell it, you know. The thing is, though, most people that own real estate are going to still own it when the market collapses, just like the people who didn't get out of the Internet stocks. You know, it's interesting. There was an article it was in a magazine. I read it. I forget the magazine, Newsweek or Businessweek, but it was written by none other than Henry Blodgett. Henry Blodgett of Merrill Lynch, of, Yahoo, $400 a share, the poster boy for the dot-com bubble. And what was he writing about? He wrote an article, Is Your House an Internet Stock? And it was comparing the frenzy to buy real estate with the frenzy in the 1990s to buy stocks. And he obviously knows a lot about that, having been at the epicenter of that bubble. And his article is good. I mean, he's right on. I mean, he is, I think if anything, he's still pulling his punches a little bit. I mean, most people tend to do that to be considered mainstream. But most of his points were very valid. And his observations about the similarities between the psychology and the participants in Nasdaq mania and the real estate mania are right on. I mean, of course, they're the same arguments that I've made for some time. But he's not totally an insider anymore. I mean, because he's been barred permanently, I guess, from the securities industry. But I've got a little bit more credibility than Blodgett, because while Blodgett was the poster boy for the Internet bubble, I knew it was a bubble. I was calling it a bubble while it was still inflating. I mean, that's where I've got some credibility here. I mean, I was telling people in 1998, 1999 that the stock market was a bubble, that they needed not to be involved, that they could take their chances and speculate, because I didn't know how high it was going to go. Whenever you're in a bubble, you never know how high it's going to go. It's impossible to know. But you know you're there. And what I did know is I knew that most people who didn't get out were going to be stuck in. That's why I didn't feel bad about having people get out too early, because I knew if I didn't get them out too early, they would never get out at all. And so, you know, but for a while it's difficult to get out early because everybody laughs at you because you're missing out on all these profits. But, you know, as I said, you know, they don't really have profits. They just think they have them. But the difference on the real estate market is a lot of these people are actually spending those profits even though they haven't sold their house because they're getting leverage. They're borrowing money. See, most people, when they had money invested in the stock market, they didn't spend the money until they actually sold the shares. Now, they might have thought they were getting rich, and maybe their added stock market wealth meant that they didn't feel that they had to save as much money, and so they might have been spending money that they otherwise would have saved were not for the gains in their stock portfolios. But they weren't really taking loans out against their portfolios in a major way and using it to take vacations or you know, to remodel their kitchens or whatever. I mean, people treated their stock market portfolio a little bit differently than their real estate gains. For some reason, most Americans feel that real estate gains are forever, that whatever your house is worth today, it's going to be worth that amount plus something else in the future, that it can't go down, that there's no worry. So people have no problem borrowing whatever profits are in their house and spending it just like it was part of their regular paycheck. I mean, people look at real estate appreciation like earnings from their job, only better because they don't have to pay taxes on it. So this is the problem when this bubble bursts. I mean, well, certainly that isn't the problem for the people who borrowed and spent the money. It's the problem for the people who lent the money. And who are the people who lent the money? Anybody who has a bank account. Anybody who has a government bond. Anybody who has money in insurance cash value. It's dollar savers. These are the ones who are going to get hold of the bag when the real estate bubble bursts. See, that's the problem. When the stock market bubble bursts, the people who lost were the people who participated, the people who bought stocks. When the real estate bubble bursts, people are going to get wiped out who never bought a house. They're going to get wiped out because they lent money. Maybe they didn't do it directly, but they deposited their money with a bank, or they have a pension, right? They were going to get a pension, but their pension invested the money in mortgage-backed securities. So many people who weren't even involved are going to get wiped out in this real estate bubble. So it's very important that people recognize the magnitude of this bubble, the fact that it is, you know, when it blows up, it's going to be the nuclear explosion of bubble bursting. And people need to protect themselves now, you know. And if you have a house, yeah, sell that thing. Sell it now while you can, while people can still get an interest-only zero-down loan. Because when the credit spigot is gone, so are the buyers, and so is your ability to sell. So sell and rent, you know, and there are great deals out there. Vacancy rates nationwide are at a 40-year high. It's never been a better time to be a renter. Why? Because nobody wants to do it. When nobody wants to rent, rents are low. When everyone wants to buy, prices are high. That's how the government is able to con us on inflation. They keep looking at it, this core CPI. What's the biggest part of the core CPI? Rent. 40% of that core CPI is comprised of rents. 40%. And rents are artificially depressed by everybody's desire to buy and rent. Because when you buy an investment property, you want to rent it out, even if you're renting it out at a negative cash flow, which most people are today. Most people who are buying single-family residences and renting them out are losing money every month. But they're willing to accept that loss because they're going to make all this money, or at least they think they're going to make all this money when they're able to sell it to an even greater fool who is willing to eat an even bigger loss because he thinks he's going to find an even bigger fool than him. Well, you know, that whole game, eventually you run out of fools, and the last fool is caught holding the bag. And it very well might be that the last fool is already in. I mean, this bubble has already gone on to such an extreme, but can it go higher? Of course it can go higher. Just like the NASDAQ, you know, when it was at 4,000, it could go higher, and it did. It went to 5,000. And when it got to 5,000, did it go higher? Not much. Went to maybe 5,100, but that was it. Now, when the NASDAQ was at 5,000, most people were saying 6,000 is a sure thing. And it very well could have been a sure thing, but it didn't happen. So we had a great year of real estate price appreciation. Is it going to happen again? It could, but this can easily be the top, just like 5,000 was the top of the NASDAQ. Nobody rang a bell. You know, it wasn't like all of a sudden something was different and then the market went down. Nothing changed. And, you know,
interest rates, 30-year interest rates, are the lowest they've ever been. They're about as low. Now, the short-term rates, the ARMs, are not the lowest because short rates have risen. You know, it's interesting. When the Fed first started raising interest rates, the Fed funds rate was down at 1%, and long-term Treasury bonds were about 4.5%. On the 10-year, it was about 4.5%. Now, short-term rates are 3%. They've tripled, right? And the 10-year is at 4%. The 10-year has gone down. So the difference, I mean, the yield curve is contracted to almost next to nothing. There is barely any difference between borrowing overnight and for 10 years, and very little difference for borrowing for 30 years. Now, this is a situation that is not going to persist, and it is a function, I think, of a lot of speculators in the market. It's because of hedge funds. It's because of the mortgage-backed hedging strategies. It's because of tremendous leverage being used by these hedge funds, and of course it's because of foreign central banks. None of it is because of legitimate investor demand. I mean, there isn't an investor in the world who would be, I don't think, would be dumb enough. Even the people who are buying residential real estate probably would be dumb enough to buy a 10-year government bond at 4% and clip coupons to maturity. I mean, even based on the government's own doctored CPI, inflation in this year is running at an annual rate of just under 5%. Well, if inflation is 5%, why the hell would you buy a bond that's paying 4%? Remember, you've still got to pay taxes on that 4%, but 4%, you're already losing 1% after inflation. So there's nobody. Nobody would make that buy. So it's the people who are buying it are not really buying it for the investment merit. They're buying it for some other reason. But once those reasons turn around and all these hedge funds become sellers instead of buyers, when the mortgage-backed portfolio guys become sellers instead of buyers, and when the central banks pull out of the market, you know, interest rates can rise so fast it can make your head spin. But I don't think that that's likely to be what pricks the real estate bubble. My guess now is the real estate bubble is going to prick under its own weight. I think that when interest rates spike up, that'll be the nail in the coffin. But I think real estate prices are going to put their highs in before higher interest rates really kick in. I think real estate prices are already going to peak. They might already be, you know, heading down, or the sales would have been driving up. And then real estate interest rates are likely to spike and just really put the nail in the coffin and just crush it. But don't think that, oh, I'm just going to wait for real estate interest rates to go up and then I'll know, that'll be my cue to sell. It won't. Plus, of course, if you wait for interest rates to go up, there's no one to sell to. Because if interest rates are a lot higher, no one can afford to buy your house. You've got to sell your house while interest rates are still low, because that's the only way that the buyers are able to buy. But not only interest rates have to be low, the lenders have to be, you know, have to be willing to lend. The lenders have to be so blinded by the bubble that they're willing to lend money to people with bad credit histories, because they're so confident that it doesn't matter, because they think real estate can only go up. So who cares if the guy doesn't pay his loan? The price of the house is going to go up anyway. So you've got to be willing to sell out while you still have this crazy mentality. Anyway, let's pause. We'll take one more break. Let me give you guys the phone number again. The lines are empty. Please give me a call. You know, introduce some new topics of discussion. I'd love to hear from you. Anybody who was at the Gold Show or the Money Show, or you know, I happened to be at any of my, I gave a presentation last night in front of about a 50 or 60, you know, a small crowd of people at the University Club, which was a beautiful, beautiful building I'd never been to in Manhattan. It was on 54th Street, right on 5th Avenue, a very old building, but it really, really lets you see and appreciate the architecture and what America really was about, you know, at the turn of the last century, and really how much wealth we had as a society, and what a real free market economy can do. And what people can produce under those circumstances. But anyway, give me a call to ask some questions in this final segment. I'd like to get a few calls in. It's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Remember, I like to, at least, you know, when I get people calling, I know there are people listening, and I know the show is making an impact. 888-678-9597. Let's play the commercial one last time, and we'll pick it up at the other side.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro-Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back for the last segment here. You know, I haven't really talked too much today about the dollar as far as the exchange rates, what's happening in the currency markets. Most of you know we have been involved in a correction in the dollar's bear market. The dollar has been rallying of late, although the dollar has lost some marginal ground in each of the last three trading sessions, but nothing spectacular. I think on the euro, we need to see the euro up above 127 before it might look like we've put in a short-term low in the euro or top in the dollar. But I don't think there is a lot more left to this rally. I mean, there are so many long-term dollar bears who are short-term dollar bulls right now. I mean, I've been talking about this the last 6 months. I mean, there has been a lot of speculative buying in the dollar. And a lot of the buying is coming from people who agree with me in the long term, who think that long run the dollar is going to collapse, but in the short run it's due for a rally. And when you have a lot of bullishness in a bear market, that's usually a good sign that we're headed lower, you know, because too many people are fooled. It's interesting that so many people are claiming that the reason that they are bullish on the dollar is because everybody else is bearish. But everybody can't make that argument. Everybody can't claim to be a contrarian. So to me, I think that you've got way too many dollar contrarians, way too many people looking for a surprise rise in the dollar. Well, I mean, how's it going to be a surprise if everybody is expecting it? And, you know, people are thinking, why is it going to happen? Well, interest rates are going up. Well, duh, we all know interest rates are going up. Well, the problem is they're not going up fast enough, and real interest rates are still negative, and higher interest rates are going to hurt the U.S. economy. So all these are dollar negative. Yes, on the surface, higher rates, higher dollar, but when you actually look at what's going on, higher rates mean lower dollar. And sure, nothing goes in a straight line. We really need to sucker in a lot of speculators, get some people into this market, and when the dollar starts to break down and breaks through support, you are going to get an avalanche of selling in this currency. And if the central banks aren't there to support it, the long-term support in the dollar index is going to give way, and we're just going, the dollar's going to get crushed, absolutely crushed. But, you know, you can't wait for that to try to protect yourself because it'll be too late. You know, it's like trying to buckle up your seatbelt when your car is about to hit a wall. You don't have enough time to do that. You know, you've got to be buckled up before, because you're not going to be able to reach for your seatbelt and buckle it up in the 2 or 3 seconds it takes from between you see that you're going to get an accident and the accident is over. So you've got to be prepared, and that's let us help you do that. I mean, if you have an account with us already, great. You know, it's a great time to add to it. You know, some of our clients have called. You know, many of our accounts, or you know, probably almost all of our accounts, are down over the last month or two from where they were. You know, many of our clients are experiencing a decline for the first time. You know, some of our clients that have been with us for 4 or 5 years or 6 years realize that not every quarter is an up quarter, not every month is an up quarter. There are ups and downs. But when the accounts are down, when the dollar is rising, that has been the best time to add money to the account, because your dollars will go a little further. We can buy you a few extra shares of that, you know, REIT in New Zealand, or that REIT in Singapore, or that utility in Hong Kong. This is the time to add the account. You get more bang for your buck, literally. So, you know, give us a call. The fact that these accounts have gone down a little bit now, it's a good thing, right? You know, the only time that it matters what your account is worth is when you're selling. If you're not selling your shares, if you weren't intending on selling, then the fact that the price has gone down is meaningless, just like the price going up. I mean, just because the stocks that you own go up, it doesn't mean that you're any better off if you don't sell at those prices. You have to transact there. That's where, you know, I talk a lot about real estate. Everybody who thinks they're so wealthy in real estate thinks they're wealthy because everybody's looking at comps, comparable sales. Everybody knows that I live in a condo and one just like it just sold, so therefore mine is worth the same as his, therefore I've just made this money. But the fact that your neighbor sold his house for a certain amount of money means nothing to you if you don't sell yours. Yeah, you can pretend that if you put yours on the market, that's what you would get. But if you don't put yours on the market, you don't get anything. So what difference does it make? The only time the price matters is when you sell. And it doesn't matter if your neighbor sold his house, his condo, for $500,000, but by the time you sold yours, you only got $200,000. What difference does it make what your neighbor got at one time? It means nothing to what you actually get when you sell. And so that's the same thing with your stock portfolio. If you're not going to sell, price can be a signal to you as to what's happening to the asset, but it doesn't affect you if you don't transact. And what you need to do, if an asset is falling in price, it's a great opportunity to buy more, right? You know, so if you own an asset and you're looking to accumulate more, you want the price to go down. You know, you don't want it to go up. You know, that's what a lot of people make a mistake. They want it to go up so they can buy more higher. No, if you want to buy more, you want to buy it lower. In the long run, sure, it's going to go up. But in the short run, if you want to buy more. You only want the price to be high when you're getting rid of it, when you're selling. And, of course, if the price is going to be high when you're selling, you're going to have to be selling when everybody else is convinced that they should be, that you should be buying. That's what it is to be a contrarian. That's how you buy low and sell high. You have to buy what no one else wants, what everybody is convinced is only going to go lower. That's how you get it cheap. And then when everybody is convinced that the price can only go higher, when everybody wants it, that's when you have to sell. And of course, when you want to apply that to today's real estate market, there is no other asset that everybody is so convinced can only go up as real estate. And what makes it worse is there's an unlimited amount of money that will be loaned to anybody who wants to buy real estate. So that's like a, you know, it's like a match in gasoline. I mean, it's a really explosive situation when you combine that type of mentality with unlimited access to cheap credit. I mean, it's no wonder that this has happened. Hey, I know we got one of the, is there Ron on the line or is this the, I think Ron called back and wanted to know how you get to go to some of these conferences. You know, you just got to sign up for them. The money shows are free. You just got to sign up. It's you know, you can go to them at the, you know, go to our website, call up Euro Pacific Capital, and we can, you know, the brokers can tell you. One of the, I think we're probably going to add some links on our website. I'm going to add something on there, you know, upcoming appearances with links to where the conferences are. The New Orleans conference, I know, is a paid conference. Definitely, if you're interested in going to the New Orleans conference, we might have some kind of discount for Euro Pacific Capital clients. So give us a call, and you know, we'll get you some information on all these conferences. But I think I will probably, you know, sometime in the next month or two, I think I'm going to add something to the website, which, if you don't know, it is www.europac.net, that will talk about my upcoming appearances. I know I've got one coming up in June, actually, in New Hampshire. I'm speaking at some type of, you know, Freedom event up there. Also, I might start putting a list of my talk radio shows. We're talking to some public relations people, and I think I am going to be doing quite a bit more talk radio on just standard talk radio. And for those of you who don't know, I am in the process of working on a book. I don't have a title yet, and we're not sure exactly which publishing company is going to publish it. We're going to see who can give me the best offer, but I'm working on it now. I've got a co-writer, and we're going to be working on the book. Hopefully, we can have it done by the end of the year. And so I'm also going to try to do a lot of promotional appearances with respect to the launching of the book on talk radio, and maybe even some signings in some of the bookstores. And so I'll definitely want to have some type of event calendar on the website so people know where I'm going to be appearing or where I'm going to be speaking, and people can show up for these events. But in any event, the key is, you know, this is a little lull before the storm. The dollar has gained some support. The weak dollar is kind of off the front pages once again. And the time is right for another unsuspected, you know, stealth collapse. So, you know, take advantage of it. If you've already a client, you know, if you're looking at your statement, if your account's gone down a little bit, you know, this is not a negative, it's a positive. Get more money into the account. Call us up. Find out what our new recommendations are, you know, where you can add money. You know, it's 800-727-7922. If you've been procrastinating, if you're listening to this show, you know, I've been doing this show now for 10 months or so, if you've been listening to this show for any number of those months and you still don't have an account with us, you got to get on the ball. You know, you got to give us a call and get moving and use this opportunity. Remember, for the first 5 or 6 months that I did the radio show, every single week the dollar was down. Every week. It was like, you know, week after week after week after week. Now, for the last few months, we've had the dollar moving higher to sideways. This is not the end. This is just the lull. And there is a huge, huge move coming in the dollar, I think. I think the lion's share of the collapse is still in our future, not in our past, and we need to prepare for that. Remember, even though the dollar lost a lot of ground between 2002 and 2005, it gained a lot of ground between 1995 and 2000. The dollar is the same place that it was right now in the mid-80s, in the late 70s. I mean, we haven't collapsed yet. It's the same place it was in 1995. Now, sure, if you take the trading range, if you take a look at where the dollar has traded over the last 15 or 20 years, it's at the low end of that range, but it's still in the range. It shouldn't be in the range, given the tremendous problems that we've had, given the tremendous quantity of dollars that we have flooded the world with in the past few years, given our precarious situation as an economy, given our current account, our trade deficit, and our lack of savings, given the fact that our industrial base has so deteriorated during this time period, we shouldn't be at the low end of the old range. We should be at a new range, a much lower range that is more justified based on the new, far weaker fundamentals of the U.S. economy. So this is still an opportunity for people to get out of the dollar in the old range. Sure, it's the old end, it's the low end of the old range, but it could be the high end of the new range. You know, in fact, you know, it's very similar to oil. I think, you know, the old trading range in oil was, you know, between the mid-teens and the high 30s. And we blew through that. Now, you know, sure, anybody that used to buy oil up in the high 30s was getting crushed every time. Now, if you can get oil in the high 30s, you're buying it cheap because the new range is, you know, the new lows are in the upper 40s. We've busted through the old range, and oil is not going back down to this range. So I think once the dollar index, and I like to talk about the dollar index because it's a very popular index to follow, but once we break through 80 and go into a new range, you know, 80 used to be support. 80 could be massive, massive resistance. In fact, once we crash through 80, we may never see it again. Right? 80, we might be looking up at 80, you know, with a sore neck. You know, it'll be like a nosebleed level. I don't know. I think the dollar index could easily go down to 40, half of 80, and maybe even a lot lower. I don't know. But right now, it's still in the old range. Take advantage of that and sell. And the way you sell your dollars is you open up an account at Euro Pacific Capital, or if you have an account, you send more dollars into it, and we use them to accumulate assets in other countries. And then you get out of the dollar, and you get other currencies. You get assets that pay you income that's coming to the account in those currencies. Sure, we convert the dividends to dollars when you get them, but that's only as we get them. And that's what enables you to spend them in the U.S. You know, right now you can't take euros or Swiss francs or New Zealand dollars to the grocery store or to the gas station. You know, maybe one day you will. Who knows? I mean, we could have a black market in this country one day where if you want to get anything, you're going to have to pay with foreign currency because if you pay with dollars, it might not be anything available. Who knows? I don't know how bad it's going to get. But all I can tell you is I don't want to find out how bad it gets with dollars in my wallet. I want to find out with these other currencies. And so this lull before the storm, this pause, is just the opportunity that we need, that you need, to get your money out of harm's way in time. You know, if the dollar had collapsed last month, it would be too late for a lot of you. This is some free time or some sound time. Don't squander this opportunity. It's a gift from above. Take advantage of it. And I'm here to help you do that, and so are the other brokers at Euro Pacific Capital. So, you know, give them a call. You know, again, the number is 800-727-7922. And I know we're running out of time. We're winding the show up. I thank everybody once again for visiting with us. We'll be here again next week at the same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Don't forget to visit the website at www.europac.net. Europac.net. Remember, there's a new research report we've got on the site. The powerful case for international investing. Download it for free. It's on the website. Call us anytime at 800 727
800-727-7922. Again, this has been Peter Schiff. I'm president of Euro Pacific Capital, headquartered in Newport Beach with our new offices in Darien, Connecticut, opening up next week, the following week at the latest. And again, we'll see you here next week. So long, everybody.